Oops, my ear's coming off. Good morning, everyone. It's really great to be back here in Canberra again. Could have been a little bit warmer, but it's cold back in Newcastle where I live too. it's just lovely to be here amongst friends and to take some time to explore this theme of consumerism. If you want to throw the first slide up there, thanks. I got married back in 1987, and the first couple of years Sandy and I were married, we lived in a house in Caringbah, down in on the south side of Sydney. And just up the road from us, there was a little corner store. And there was a couple who had just bought that about the same time that we moved into the house we were in, George and Ruler. And I have never met two people who worked harder than George and Ruler. They opened up their shop around about 6:30 every morning, didn't close till about 9 o'clock each evening, and they're open for 365 days in the year. One day in that year, they got their family to come in and run the shop for them, so they had one day off in the whole year. And I'd go up every morning to buy a newspaper, and I'd have a chat to George or Ruler, whoever was on the counter, and we got to know each other, and we'd often stop and talk about things. And one day, George said to me, Scott, would you like to get involved in some business with me? And I said, don't know, tell me a bit more. So he started telling me more, and it was an Amway business. And George had started this on top of the work he was already doing. So as well as working from 6:30 till 9 o'clock at night, every day of the year bar one, he was doing an Amway business distributorship on top of that. And every time I'd go up, he'd say, well, what do you think about that business, Scott? You happy to get involved yet? And I'd kind of politely decline, and the next time I'd go back, he'd come up with another reason why I should get involved in this business with him. And I'd politely decline, and I'd go back up, he'd come up with another reason why I should get involved with this business with him. And then one day he was totally exasperated, and he slammed his fist down onto the counter and he said, don't you want to make more money? And no one had ever asked me that question so starkly before. And I said, no. And his mouth dropped open as though I just confessed to stealing from his shop every day. It was he just couldn't comprehend it. How could a human being not want to make more money? He and Ruler, they wanted it all. They wanted the big house, the big cars, the big holidays. And he couldn't fathom how every human being didn't share that dream with him. Well, over the years, I've found myself probably more and more sucked into the sort of consumerist lifestyle, I think, that characterises our society. And I think that certainly George and Ruler had bought into big time. Sorry, I'm just going to fix my mic there. And I found it increasingly difficult to actually not want to have more. Or actually not even not to want to not have more, just to expect to have more and to keep having it. As you know, wages have risen well above the inflation rate over the last 30 or 40 years. I've just naturally taken my wage rises and spent on more stuff. Did better holidays for the family. More reliable cars. Better mod cons in the house. And I think that seems to be the pattern of most of the world around me. And it seems to me we have to come to grips with this fact that as followers of Jesus, we live in a society that is marked by consumerism, or as it says up there on the slide, a society that is social and economic order that encourages the purchase of goods and services in ever greater amounts. That's our society. We just consume more and more and more and more. In fact, a few years ago I did the sums. And I looked at the real incomes of my generation compared to the real incomes of my grandparents' generation. And the average Australian of my generation actually had three times more in real terms, more income, than my grandparents' generation did. Yet we didn't seem to be three times more happy. We didn't seem to be three times more content. We just spent three times as much. And still we're left with the sense that we'd like to have more. And this is the world of consumerism in which we live. It just wants us, it encourages us to keep getting more and more and more. And whatever you get, you just spend. And then you hope to get more so you can spend more on top of that. And it's a pattern that I think Jesus' teaching calls into question. In fact, this teaching of Jesus that we just read is quite confronting when you look at what he's got to say. And over the years, I found that I spent a lot of time trying to justify why Jesus' teaching didn't really quite apply in the same way to me. And, you know, coming up with all these elaborate explanations of the passage that somehow justified our consumerist lifestyles. But I don't think that holds. And so I went back and I looked a bit more at what have we said historically. And I think you see these kind of three different trends historically of how Christians have sought to explain our relationship to the material world around us. The first one's the ascetic trend, and this basically is built around the idea that somehow getting involved with the material world, having material things, getting an abundance of material things, somehow puts a block in your spirituality. It draws you away from the things of God, and so what you need to do is divest yourself of anything material. As Jesus said, you know, do not store up treasures on earth. So get rid of your treasures on earth and just store up treasures in heaven, and you'll be free from the material concerns of life. It's not a very popular one in Christianity today. You tend to find it back there in the early centuries of the church, but that was one of our early traditions. Then I think this is probably the view I think I grew up with. I've called it a conventional view of the world. And it kind of basically sees the world as pretty well ordered, and that God has ordered the world to materially reward the righteous. So you see the most extreme of that in something like prosperity theology, that says if only you act in these particular ways, God will send enormous riches and abundance upon you and not upon anyone else. But you find this sort of view in the Protestant work ethic. You work hard and you'll receive your reward. That's the way God has ordered reality. What effort you put in is what you get out. So whatever you have is yours, whatever you have is deserved, and whatever you have is God's blessing on your life. I think that's the way that what was the understanding when I grew up. We didn't teach prosperity theology in my church, but we did teach, you know, you honour God will honour you if you do the right thing with your wealth. And then the approach, I suppose, that's been more of the orbit in which I've lived in recent times is this, I think, what I've called the prophetic approach, which basically says, yeah, look, there is good order in our world, but there's also disorder. And I live in a world where there's vast amounts of poverty, where there's exploitation of workers, where the environment is being degraded, where animals are treated with cruelty. And somehow when I consume these resources that exist on the earth, I need to take that into account. So I need to try and live in a way that doesn't simply accumulate more for myself, but enables others to lift out of poverty, that doesn't involve the exploitation of workers, for example, in the manufacturing of my clothes, that doesn't contribute to the degrading of our environment, and that avoids animal cruelty. So they're the sort of three of the major sort of approaches, I think, that Christians have taken down the ages. But I'm not sure any of those quite capture fully what Jesus has got to say here in this passage in Matthew. So I want to take a look at that text by filling in a couple of features about it and details about it, and then drawing some conclusions. The first thing that strikes me about this is that this Jesus speaks here like a wisdom teacher. You know, you get those books like the Book of Proverbs in the Old Testament. It's full of these pithy little sayings. And Jesus functions very often using that same sort of model of teaching. So the wisdom teacher typically gives you sort of two stark alternatives, strips life down to its very simplest, and says, this way or that way, this way or that way, this way or that way, you choose. And so he speaks about two places you can store your treasure, in heaven or on earth. He says, choose the way of storing your treasure in heaven. He speaks about two types of states of eyes. They can be healthy or unhealthy. And there seems to be this idea here that what you fix your gaze upon will determine how much light or darkness you perceive. He talks about two masters. You can have God as your master, or you can have mammon as your master. You can't have both. And then in the more extended part, he talks about two concerns. You can concern yourself with meeting your material needs, or you can concern yourself with God's kingdom. Now, the reason that I point out that these are part of the wisdom sayings of Jesus is that wisdom invites us not to simply take something as a hard and fast rule, but to actually to tease it out, to explore it. By reducing things to the bare simplicity, wisdom invites us to ask, well, how does that work out in the complexities of my life? So, you know, for example, when Jesus says, you know, I say to you, do not respond to someone who strikes you on the cheek, but turn to them the other cheek. It's a sort of a simple interplay. What happens when someone strikes me? What's my response? A response of love or a response of violence? It gets more complex. If Jesus, for example, was to say, well, when somebody strikes that child on the cheek, what do you do? Now there's three parties involved. And what's my responsibility as the third person? What does it mean for me to act in love towards this child? Does it mean I actually jump in and stop this person from hitting them? Or do I say to the child, turn the cheek? You get what I'm saying? Life's quite complex, and wisdom sayings tend to, it seems to me, boil things down to very simple, not simplistic, but simple perspectives, and then invite us to ask, how does that work itself out in our life? So what does it mean for me to store up treasures in heaven? What does that mean? Well, how does that relate to treasures on earth? So it's inviting us to tease that out and explore it and ask, how do these principles work out in the detail of our lives? So that's the first thing I find helpful in trying to understand what Jesus has got to say here. The second thing, I think, is to recognise that Jesus is appealing to the memory of Israel. He just doesn't speak in a vacuum. He's speaking as Israel's Messiah. And so we've got to assume the Old Testament story. You know, there's this amazing story the Old Testament told of a group of people who had received the land as a gift. And as a gift to be shared for the shalom of all, for the well-being of all. So every human being in Israel, every animal in Israel was to enjoy shalom, was to enjoy the well-being of God. And the Old Testament law had all these kinds of provisions about how we were to live to make that come to be. So, for example, God said to the Israelites, you know, the year of Jubilee, every 50th year, all land gets returned to its original ancestral owners. So you redistribute the land so that you don't get a whole bunch of people owning all the land and a whole bunch of people without any land, because this is an era when people earn their income off farming. It's just, you make sure everybody has access to land. If somebody doesn't have enough money to get them through the next season, you loan them give them an interest-free loan. If somebody doesn't have enough to eat, they can go into your field and take whatever they need, eat whatever they need. You see, there's all these provisions that were designed to make sure that every person got rest, every animal got rest, and every person was able to enjoy sufficient for their needs. So that's the memory of Israel. The reality they're experiencing was something very different. We think from the best we can construct from the historical records of the time, is that this was a period where the poor farmers were being increasingly dispossessed from their land by the demands of an oppressive empire and the collusion of a wealthy elite. So the Roman Empire had conquered. They imposed a whole bunch of taxes in order to transfer wealth from the regions back to Rome, and people were losing their properties as a result. They were falling into debt. They couldn't pay their taxes, so they would go and take out a loan. It was not being given interest-free as the Old Testament had called them to. They were being charged exorbitant rates of interest. When they couldn't be paid that, they were forced off their land. And once you're a peasant forced off your land, you're left either as a day labourer or a sharecropper. And you find yourself living on the fringes of poverty. And Richard Horsley, who's done a lot of examination of the social circumstances of this period, suggests that what he thinks was happening at the same time was that not only was the mechanisms for this shared vision of life breaking down amongst the elite, but it was then breaking down at the village level. As every day, you know, people were going, well, I can't loan you anything anymore because I won't have enough for me. I can't give to you what you need because I won't have enough for me. And so you start seeing people turning in upon themselves, communities turning in upon themselves. And so that this vision of a shared life, of shared abundance, was lost to fear. Now in that context, when I read Jesus here, it seems to me that what he's saying is remember the dream. Remember the covenant. Remember the people you were called to be. This is who you're called to be. And when he speaks of the kingdom, seeking first the kingdom of God, he's not talking about, you know, seeking first to go to heaven after you die. He's talking about how is God's reign finding expression here amongst you now? How is it manifesting? How is God's reign manifesting in your life? And if it's manifesting in turning away from each other, if it's manifesting in, I've got to look after myself because there's not enough, so I won't turn and share, I won't turn and act justly to my neighbour, then you're missing the kingdom, says Jesus. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Go back a touch where Jesus says, look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or spin, yet your Father cares for them. Look at the flowers of the field. Your Father looks after them. I always took it that what he was saying was, you know, well, that means that I've just got to, you know, go full on after God's kingdom, sharing the gospel, and then just trust that food will appear on my table. But I don't think that's the point. I think he's saying, look, God looks after the birds in the ways provided, the ways put together to provide for them. God looks after the flowers of the field in the ways provided for them. And God looks after you in the way he's provided, which is to build communities that reflect the kingdom. How is it that the people of Israel will find that all these things are added to them? I assume it's because they'll find that when they start to turn towards each other, they will see in each other the provision they need for their lives. Jesus says, focus on building those types of communities and you'll be on the right track. Two places you can store your wealth, in heaven or on earth. Store your treasure. And you store your treasure on earth by sharing it with others. Two concerns you can have in life. To be anxious and focus upon the immediate needs while you turn your back on everybody else, or to open yourself up to others in a community of sharing and open commensality. And so for me, I think, as I try to come to grips with these texts, I need to ask myself, in my world today, how do I embrace the way of the kingdom? How do I embrace this way of receiving the earth and its all the things in it as God's good gift to humankind and to creation? How do I enjoy that, take that, participate in that? Yet at the same time, how do I open myself up to others so that they actually can participate and enjoy as well? And so if I look back on those three historic traditions, I think in a sense they're all things we need to pay attention to. There are times that my pursuit of wealth can turn me away from God, can turn me away from the things that matter. And I need to stop doing that. There are times that what I have can be received as a pure gift with gratitude. Celebrated, enjoyed, you know, a rich meal with friends. A holiday in the company of others where we're able to soak up the beauty of God's earth. But there's also the prophetic dimension, which says I have to turn and open myself up to the world around me. I don't think there's hard and fast rules. I think there's a turning of our hearts and our minds to embrace the kingdom. And for me, that means embracing the world. It means embracing the exploited worker that you'll talk about in coming weeks. It means embracing the degraded creation. And it means embracing the animals who find themselves subjected to cruelty. And asking, how do I live out the values of God's kingdom, of God's shalom for all? And with this tradition of wisdom, taking it and saying, teasing that out and asking myself the hard questions at the same time as I celebrate the good things God has given. And that's the journey I hope you'll take over the coming weeks. There's some suggestions in the newsletter about how you can take this away from today. Maybe go away and think about, well, how are you seeking God's kingdom in your life? What are your, you know, top five priorities? as you do that, and particularly as you do that in relationship to how you relate to the wealth and the world in which you live. So I commend that to you, and pray that we would together continue to seek God's kingdom. Thanks.